What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. The rush of racing? Nothing beats it. But Chumba Casino comes close. Chumba's got fast spins, fun games, daily bonuses, and all the action you can handle. Now that's a ride. Ready to hit the throttle? Get in the driver's seat and head to ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Whether you're hunting the back 40 or chasing game deep in the backcountry, the all-new Razor Guide Pack from Outdoor Edge has it all. Coming in at only 12 ounces and in a premium wax canvas roll pack for compact storage and travel, the Razor Guide Pack is 7 blades in total, including a 5-inch replaceable blade folding knife, a 3-inch replaceable blade caping knife, and the flip and zip saw for wood or bone. For more information, visit OutdoorEdge.com. All right, welcome back to the Hunting Gear Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we're going to be talking with Jacob Coons. Now, Jacob reached out to me, and he's like, dude, I have a YouTube channel where I just kind of compare and review a whole bunch of different products, right? And so we talk about how he reviews his, you know, does his product reviews in this, the hunting industry, the hunting space. There's two kind of main focuses today on some of the latest reviews that he's done, and that's puffy jackets and hunting apps, right? So we talk about brands like Sitka and I believe Kuyu and First Light, and then off-brand, like not necessarily hunting brands like Columbia and Eddie Bauer and things like that. Then we start talking about companies like, as far as the hunting app is concerned, we start talking about HuntStand, Onyx, what else do we talk about? Spartan Forge, and then some of the other hunting apps that are out there. It's a great conversation, man. There's a lot we talk about in the space of like direct to consumer, right? And one thing that I've kind of noticed is that direct to consumer, the used to be, hey man, we're saving money, you know, because we're going direct to consumer because they don't have a middleman. Thus, you know, they don't need to, you know, have as big a margins between what they sell it for, because there's only one sale. It's not two sales. And so, but what we've kind of noticed is that direct to consumer is just the same price as everything else. It's just direct to consumer, meaning their margins are way bigger than the other companies. I mean, meaning they're making more money, and that's smart. I mean, can't fault them for doing it, especially if they're successful. But this is kind of one thing we talk about. On top of that, we talk about, you know, how Jacob kind of does his reviews. We talk about what he looks for in products that he's purchasing, or how, you know, the products that we want to do, or that he wants to do reviews on. I forgot, we talk about headlamps, things like that. It's a really good BS conversation about hunting gear and equipment. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. Before we get down to the brass tacks, though, we are going to do, what do we got here? Oh, we got Tethered. If you're looking for a saddle man, go check out Tethered. Tethered is one of those companies that has built a really good community around its product. And they do that by having top-notch saddles, saddle hunting accessories, platforms, climbing sticks. But the community that they've created around their brand really is focused on helping you become a better hunter, helping you become more educated in the world of saddle hunting, and it's just awesome to see. So go check out tetherednation.com. We have Hunt Stand. We talk about Hunt Stand today, and where they ranked in his review, and it's towards the top. I think you'll be pleasantly surprised, and all the functionality that goes along with Hunt Stand. I mean, Hunt Stand, for the value, you know, that they, for the price that they charge to have a membership and the functionality that comes along with it, the value is just amazing, right? So they, you know, all the maps and all the satellite imagery, you hear us talk about that today. So huge shout out to Hunt Stand, huntstand.com. And then last but not least is Tacticam, right? So if you're the type of person who likes to document their hunts, so you can go back and show your kids, so you can go back and show your wife, if she didn't believe you, you saw the Michigan 30-point buck, then, and it's just awesome to save that, go back and say, hey, I saw that buck last year, or, hey, man, I think I'm not sure where I hit this deer. I'm going to review the footage, and then it's going to tell me if I should wait or if I should go back and start tracking immediately. So, go check out Tacticam, the new 6.0 version. What do they have that has an LCD screen? It records in 4K. It has image stabilization. And, man, that's cool. So go check it out if you're into action cams and things like that. So Tacticam, go check them out. And that's it. Let's get into today's, I guess we're going to call it a kind of like a BS hunting session, where we talk about puffy jackets. We talk about hunting apps and much more with Jacob Koons. Hopefully you guys enjoy. 3, 2, 1. All right, on the phone with me today, joining us on the Hunting Gear Podcast, Mr. Jacob Koons. Jacob, man, what's up?
Not much, Dan. I appreciate you having me. It's I'm just ready for, I mean, I hate to wish for the fall to get here, but I'm just chomping at the bit to you know, to get out west or to hunt whitetails, or, you know, just to shoot, you know, do all that stuff. But, right. But things are going good here. Yeah. How about you?
I'm doing good, man. It's currently raining. It went from last week to 70s and 80s here in Iowa, just like the perfect weather. No humidity, just gorgeous. You know, you can feel the warmth on the back of your neck type of days. And then now it's back down into the 40s and 50s, and the next handful of days it's going to be raining. And, but that only means that when the mushrooms come, I'll be ready for them.
Okay. Wow. Yeah, I used to live in Iowa. I've bounced around a little bit. I live in Kentucky now. I know there are, I have a few friends that are sort of in the mushroom game. That's not my game. I haven't played that game,
yeah.
But,
you should play
do
it.
Do you have your,
you
do
should
you
play
have
it.
Your spots? Do you have your spots marked on, like, your mapping system?
Oh,
and
yeah.
Stuff? Like,
well, I don't even trust the mapping systems for my mushroom spots. Okay, they're all right here. They're all in the head. So when I die, they die. I don't share them with anybody. I don't share.
Oh wow!
It's crazy. Like I don't know about you, but you know, a guy will talk about his hunting spots a little bit. He'll talk about, you know, where he's seen a big buck. He'll talk about, you know, for the most part, there are some guys who are just, you know, sealed lips and things like that. But when it comes to mushroom hunting, I've found that the people who take mushroom hunting really serious, They don't share spots. They don't share any information with anybody. They'll go, they'll clean house, and then it's almost like they're Navy SEALs, man. They go into the woods and you never even know they were there, other than maybe you'll run across a whole bunch of mushroom stems that have been already been picked. But where did you used to live when you were in Iowa?
I lived in Davenport. I was it was right out of college. It was a long time ago, and I had sort of talk about the mushroom game. I was sort of out of the hunting game because I was in, you know, corporate America, and I was thinking about my career and all that kind of stuff. I was up there. I remember trying to scout some public land, but I was in my early 20s, and you know, when I was hunting, when I would hunt as a kid, there was no strategy or tactics around it. It was like, go find a good tree and just sit there all day. And it wasn't until later, as I got older, when I discovered that there could be some strategy and tactics employed, that I got back into it. And so I would say for the past better part of a decade or more, I've been sort of hardcore about, you know, whitetails and elk and just, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So. Yeah. Awesome. Okay. So you're now in Kentucky. What do you do for a living?
So I'm in medical sales. I work for a small company out of California. And the cool thing about being in sales is there's a lot of autonomy, and I have the whole state of Kentucky and then part of Indiana, and I get to see the beautiful country that we have in this part of the country. So, I'm in sales. And
what do you sell?
I enjoy it. It's cancer drugs.
Okay.
Yeah, and to the the health systems across this region. And it really is just about bringing, a lot of times people think sales can be kind of slimy, but really it's just about bringing value to people and bringing information. And you I learned long ago through, by getting kicked in the teeth, that sales is not about you personally or what your goals are or what your needs are. It's really about the other person and understanding what metrics they're measured on and then trying to align to that. So, so it took me a while to figure that out. But I used to think sales was just bothering people all the time, and it's not that at all. So I really enjoy what I do, and I've sort of stuck with it for 25 years. I'm almost 49. So
okay,
I'm getting really old.
All right. And so now, when you were younger, you mentioned you were trying to climb the corporate ladder. Are you making time now, over this last 25 years, to get out in the woods and do some hunting?
Yeah, years ago, Dan, I saw an article. I mean, it was Outdoor Life or Field and Stream, and it was about hunting pronghorn out west, and like that sparked a fire in me. And so I like I said, for the better part of a decade, I've been trying to I've been hunting whitetails and sort of in a run and gun fashion, but also been going out west. Mm-hmm. And a couple years ago, I killed an elk in Montana on a general tag with my bow, and I told my wife then, I was like, I've got to do this sort of thing every year. I mean I'm getting in my late 40s. In a decade, Dan, it'll be gone like that. I'll be 60 years old, and I'll be like, what did I do with my freaking life?
Right.
So, I have been making a lot of time because I was in sort of the corporate game, and really that's, I did like flag football or intramural sports and fantasy football and all this other goofy stuff that didn't really mean anything. And then I found hunting again, and now it's like the only thing I really want to do. So, But I remember coming back, Dan, from that Montana trip, and I was like 3 days later, I was like bawling. I was curled up in a ball crying to my wife how much I wanted to go back. It was like a life-changing experience. So, some of us that do that Western thing, we have that sort of experience, and it's like, oh my gosh, I want to change my life around those experiences. So,
yeah. Well, that's awesome, man. It's almost like I just got done talking, you're 40, almost 49. I just got done talking with a guy earlier this week who's 28, right? Or so basically 20 years younger than you. and he's just now bounced back into hunting. And so one of the things I really find interesting is amongst all these interviews that I do, whether it's about hunting gear and equipment, or, you know, just a BS session with someone, or a hunter profile that I where I pull someone apart basically and talk about how they got involved into hunting. The foundation is that there's this, like, this passion, that there's something about hunting and fishing that literally can, like, it just grabs a hold of you and it stays there. It's not like, I don't know, it's not like a football team or let's say a sports team where, well, they're having a really bad year and I'm not going to watch their games next year or whatever because they got a bad year. Hunting, if the hunting's bad, man, I still want to go again. If the fishing's bad, I still want to go again. And there's something about it, and it changes people's lives for the better, and I just wish everybody could experience that.
You know, my son, he's 14, and he'll say, "Dad, have fun hunting." And I'm like, "Grant, hunting isn't fun." And I think it's the difficulty within it that makes it so rewarding.
Yeah.
I mean, if we've all done difficult things, maybe run, you know, 5Ks or marathons or whatever, and those are cool, but you know, there's just a different type of endurance with hunting, whether you're hunting whitetails or turkeys or elk or mule deer or whatever. I mean, I know you're on an endurance challenge of your own with mule deer.
Yeah.
And so, and you're not like going to fold the tent up and go home. You're like, I'm going back out after it. And yeah. I know you're going to, that filling that tag is going to be that much sweeter when you do.
Yeah.
So it's an interesting dynamic. And I wish I would have woken up when I in my early 20s instead of my late 30s or whatever. So
yeah, I'm in the same boat. It sucks that you feel like you've had this wasted time. You know, you've wasted time doing something that you now love, and you didn't know that you loved it as much back then because there was a whole bunch of other things in your life that you thought were a priority, but really were just wasting time.
Yeah. I mean, it life takes you down different avenues, and for better or for worse. And, you know, honestly, if it were up to me, I would have moved out west. I would have lived an incredibly selfish life. I might not be married or have kids. And,
right.
And you know, all those things are you know, a real blessing. But it's been good. I've been doubling down on, I mean, I hunted elk in Pennsylvania last year.
Oh,
and,
wow.
And that was incredible. And I've, I filled a tag with an incredible bull, and I've been able to, you know, have other opportunities. I've hunted elk here in Kentucky. And like I mentioned, out west. And so I continue to try to fill the bucket as full as it can be. And my wife is understanding because she sees that how much I support her in her endeavors. It's, you know, it's like, what can I do to lift her up? And she knows how important this is to me. And so, I'm a good dad and a good father and a good husband. So I think she understands that it's not like I'm going on big golf trips to get drunk all weekend or whatever. So.
Yeah. All right. So this, though, is the Hunting Gear Podcast. And he reached out to me and you basically said, "Hey man, I've done these reviews. I do these reviews. I do a whole bunch of different things in regards to hunting gear and equipment. And so obviously we have this passion for hunting, but why do you take that an extra step and talk a lot about, cause you have a YouTube channel and you have, you know, talk where you talk a lot about, you know, trying to find value for the consumer, you know, by product comparison and things like that. And so just why are you such a hunting gear nut?
So, you know, Dan, I mean, you know this better than anyone. Over the past 10 years, the shift from, you know, advertising dollars in magazines and the Outdoor Channel have shifted to YouTube and Instagram and all that. And
right.
So we have a lot of, the cool thing is that we have a lot of companies with the awesome gear. Cause I used to have a 30 pound gorilla climber that was banging, you know, through the woods and announcing my presence. And so, you know, as you know, that has shifted now with, you know, our hunting content on YouTube and podcasts and all that, we have a lot more people saying, try this, wear this, do this. And some of this gear is incredibly expensive. Yeah. And so, and I've looked at hunt software as well, and I'm just trying to find the intersection of value and performance so that, because I mean, there's, you know, there's Columbia and North Face and Eddie Bauer and LL Bean and all these other brands that were such a niche that they don't market to us, but I'm guessing they have gear that could help us.
Yeah.
And so, you know, like that's one of the recent things that I looked at were 7 different puppy jackets. And really taking them through a temperature challenge in terms of how quickly they could get my core temperature up, and then looking at the sound and the composition, because we hear so much about synthetic down and then down fill and down weight, and it can be kind of confusing. And so I wanted to sort of take a look at these different jackets and just look purely at performance. Yeah. Like, and so that was one of the things that I've broken down. We can certainly go into that. I did do some, the hunt map apps, so the software platforms of, Hunt Stand, Hunt Wise, Onyx, Go Hunt, Base Map, and Spartan Forge. And really, again, tried to look for the intersection of value and performance for folks like you and I that hunt not only one state, but multiple states for different types of game. And so it's a creative outlet. It's something that I'm very analytical in nature, and it's just something that I personally enjoy doing. In my free time when I'm not hunting, I'm obviously, like most of us, thinking about hunting. So it's really, that's sort of the impetus behind it.
Other than the puffy jackets and the hunting app comparisons, what other types of products have you like compared or reviewed?
So I was looking at, I did a review of 9 different headlamps, looking for value in sort of the hunting headlamp space. I've looked at, I've broken down 9 different weather apps, because there are some real junk weather apps that we download and we think that they're worthwhile. Dan, one of the weather apps that's free, that it will give you, like, and so like on your iPhone, Dan, it comes with like a weather forecast tool, right?
I have an Android, so.
Oh.
Yeah. Okay. Man, you're like, you're one of those people. It's like I'm white trash or something.
The way you said, I have an Android, it sounded like you said, I'm married.
No.
my eyes are up here, Jacob.
Yeah.
We generally have some sort of weather app on our phone, but those weather apps usually just have one forecasting model. And there's a billion different forecasting models, Dan, and how cool would it be to have a weather app that has 6 different forecasting models that you can look at simultaneously to look at the wind, to look at the temperature change, to look at precipitation. And I'll just share it. Like Windy is an app that, and there's a couple other ones called like that sound very similar, but Windy gives you those different models for free. It gives you weather cams across the country for free. So if you're traveling to Colorado, you can just, with a click of a button, you can see what the weather looks like exactly in Denver, Colorado, or Lincoln, Nebraska, or wherever. And so, you know, again, I'm just trying to find value for myself and sort of share it with others. And so, you know, there's junk weather apps like WeatherBug or there's other ones that are just looking for to take your money. But, you know, there were, of the 9, there were 3 that I really liked, and Windy is one of them. So, another thing that I looked at is the performance of merino versus silk versus polyester gloves for early season archery. And what I found there was really interesting. So you know, I just kind of try to find things that are interesting to me and sort of put that out for, you know, the public to consume. Yeah. So
that kind of answers it, but I'm going to ask the question anyway, and maybe you can elaborate on it. Why are you doing all this?
I think, you know, it's more of just a creative outlet because I enjoy learning about the, you know, video editing, and I'm trying to get better at that and maybe even start recording some of my hunts. I hope to go on an elk hunt this year, and I would love to make a hunt film around that. But it's just purely a creative outlet, Dan. Gotcha. I wish it was more elaborate of an answer that, you know, I'm an evil genius and I'm going to take over the world. And but it's just when I'm not, like I said, when I'm not hunting, it's fun to dive deep in some of this hunting stuff. And honestly, this is when I was a kid, I'm going to get real nerdy here. I used to make cassette tapes about how I would caught bluegill or smallmouth or largemouth bass, like for nobody at all, just for my own purposes. It was kind of weird, but I just like to collect that information and put it organize it and stuff.
So almost like what a doctor would do, or is like, today is April 20th. I caught 4 bluegill using a Mr. Twister or a bobber and worm. I caught this. And like, so just like document via voice on a cassette tape.
Yeah.
That's awesome. And like journaling.
Yeah. As when I was in grade school and I don't even, you know, I had no intention. I don't know what I was going to do with it, but just at that time, it was just, you know, so it's sort of the same thing. I haven't really changed much since grade school, Dan. I guess that's the bigger point
there. I haven't matured at all. I'll tell you that right now. I still laugh at fart jokes, or when my sons or daughters, you know, say something really stupid, I'll laugh at it. That's because I'm only one step above ape. Like, I'm not very, like, I laugh at those kind of things. So, one thing that comes up, in any purchasing space, right? Any retail space, whether you're buying, especially in our realm, it's the outdoors, hunting gear and equipment. Does, you know, through all of the research that you've done on certain products, do you feel that price reflects quality, or do you feel that there are instances where people are potentially getting ripped off?
So when I've done these reviews or looked at like the Hunt Map apps, I know that that's a company of people, each of those six companies, that are working hard to provide value for their customers. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe they're a little off target, or maybe they're focusing on a particular niche. And so I don't ever disparage a company, whether it's like a First Light or a Sitka or a Spartan Forge or a Hunt Stand or whatever, because I know those people are working hard. I just think that we want to belong in tribes. Mm-hmm. We obviously want to be in the hunting tribe, but you know, you've seen it, Dan, with different hunting gear, the, you know, Lone Wolf custom gear or tethered or what have you. And so when we align with those tribes, sometimes we buy with our emotions.
Right.
And because we do that, we make assumptions about that gear that might be really darn expensive and maybe overpriced in the marketplace.
Okay.
And so, you know, like Lone Wolf Custom Gear makes amazing gear, and I would love to have some of that gear, but I generally hunt out of a saddle. But, you know, if I were to look into that space, I wonder if there's something that is of equal value or similar value with Novix or with, Elevate tree stands or whatever. And because, you know, again, if I'm in that tribe, though, I might just buy the latest and greatest thing that they put out, and I might not view. So to answer your question, I do think that certainly, you know, price can reflect, you know, value at times. But I think it's just important as hunters, because we put so much emotion in what we do and how much we love it. And we, you know, are this the part of this, the beginning of this interview, we just talked about how mm-hmm. much you know, it's life-changing in some cases. I think that we really just have to have a critical eye to see, like, what is the value that this piece of gear is going to provide. So when I looked at the 7 Puffy jackets, it was a Sitka gear jacket that it was the Kelvin Light, mm-hmm. and the First Light Brooks Down, and then the Kuyu Kenai, and then it was a Columbia Thermoball, and then I think it was the Thermoball, and then there was a North Face jacket. I'd have to look at the sheet, and then an Eddie Bauer, and then I looked at those, and like I had my core temperature at 59 degrees. I was standing outside in a t-shirt, and I had a remote thermometer that, you know, when I got down to 58, 59 degrees, I would put one of those jackets on, and then for the next 5 minutes, I would measure the temperature change at 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 minutes. And so most of those jackets got me up to 69, 70 degrees. The Sitka Kelvin Light got me to 70. I remember the North Face jacket got me up to 70 degrees, which was really surprising. And then the Eddie Bauer jacket, I think it was the Stratus, it got me to 70 degrees at minute 4 and maintained it at minute 5. And so the composition of all those jackets was widely different. I mean, some of them were natural down plus a synthetic down. Some of them were only synthetic. One of them was 90% down with 10% feather, so it was all natural. And then the Eddie Bauer jacket was a 650 fill jacket. It was 80% down, 20% feathers. And it outperformed the hunting jackets. And that Eddie Bauer jacket retails for $99. The Sitka jacket retails for $359. And so, you know, if I'm a hunter and I'm trying to figure out, you know, it depends on what you're doing. I mean, if you're going to Alaska, there may be more value in that Sitka jacket because of, you know, some of, you know, the some feature that you like. Because it has some synthetic down, or maybe you want a jacket that's only synthetic, and so you want to spend a little more on a jacket that you believe in. But for me, if I'm hunting out west, or if I'm hunting whitetails here and it's a chilly November morning, or I'm hunting elk in September, that Eddie Bauer jacket was on sale for $50 when I bought it. Mm-hmm. It was retail $99. Mm-hmm. I bought it for $50, and it got me to 70 degrees at a core temperature in 4 minutes, and it beat every other jacket that I evaluated. And so to answer your question, sometimes there is, you know, sometimes there, you, what was it, cry once, you know, buy once, cry once. Yeah, sometimes that is the case, but other times it's not, and it just depends on the product category.
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, the reason that you started doing this is the reason that I started looking outside of the hunting space for some of my clothing options. And it's not necessarily because I don't like the tribalism, I guess you would say, that comes along with, hey, I wear First Light, or I wear Sitka, or I do this, or I do that. It was financially motivated, right? Because I looked at the exact same thing that you did. I was like, man, that's $300 for a jacket. And guess what? I do own that Eddie Bauer jacket that you're talking about. And that is my insulation layer for whitetails and Western hunts here in the, you know, Midwest and out West. And so,
wow. Okay.
And so I can attest that that's a badass jacket. And I can attest because I bought it for $80. I bought it, yeah, for $80 in an Eddie Bauer store, on like a clearance rack or something. And it had a retail price of like $100 or something like that. And so I've had that now for a handful of years, and it's durable, and I take care of it, and I can smush it all the way down to the size of basically a softball. And I love that, but there's a lot of things. And so this is where, you know, if we're talking about value and performance, I get that. I can say that Eddie Bauer jacket outperformed all these other jackets, and it is much more affordable than some of the other jackets. And so my next question to you is, why do you think they're probably all made overseas at some point, right? I don't know any brand that's 100% made in the United States as far as clothing and apparel is concerned. Why do you think Sitka charges that much? Or why do these other quote-unquote hunting brands charge way more for their product despite being outperformed, but like in this example, outperformed by a non-hunting brand?
So, great question. And, you know, I mean, if you read the information on the Sitka jacket, I mean, it's hooded, mm-hmm. Which the Eddie Bauer jacket is not. And I'm going to pull First Light in here. That jacket never got to 70 degrees.
Yeah.
The First Light Brooks down, that got to the top most it could get to was 66 degrees. And I'm not trying to bash that brand or that company. I'm just saying that the performance of that particular jacket, I've got tons of Sitka gears, tons of First Light gear. So I'm not, you know, they make great products, but that particular jacket failed miserably. I wouldn't even take it out, that First Light one. But, you know, they have these proprietary blends of down and a synthetic, and, you know, they, it didn't state it, but I, you know, the noise on the surface of some of these jackets was really loud and suggested that there was some sort of DWR finish to it, like a waterproofing sort of finish, because the Sitka and the First Light jackets were incredibly loud. I looked at the decibels of just a stick going across the sleeve. And so I don't know why they're so much more expensive. You know, my guess is that they're a for-profit company, like most companies are, and like I mentioned, we buy with emotions a lot of times as hunters. We belong to tribe.
And those companies have nailed that down. They have figured out the whole, hey, you want to be cool? Wear this. You know, and then it's almost like, hey, I'm part of this club, the performance of the actual product. And I'm not saying that just about those two specific brands, because there's other brands out there that in the hunting space that do the same thing. We're cool. Come hang out with us, buy our stuff, and then you'll be cool like us. And that frustrates me. That's a triggering point for me.
I would agree. And I look at like, there are companies that are tripping over themselves to get into the tent space, to get in other product categories to, I think, in my opinion, a little bit exploit hunters. Mm-hmm. I looked at headlamp performance, and there's a company that goes by the name of Peaks that sells a $90 headlamp. It's sort of a tube headlamp. You know, you have sort of the traditional box style headlamp, like a Black Diamond or a Petzl. And then you have these tube headlamps that are more new to the market. And that thing is $90. And so I compared it to eight other headlamps. And I looked at, you know, I dumped them all in a tub of water just to see if any of them would fail in a tub of water. And none of them did. The $10 Amazon headlamp that looks almost exactly the same, Dan, it looks like it's manufactured in the same facility as the Peaks headlamp, performed as well, if not better, and it's $10.
Yeah.
And that other headlamp was $90. And the only difference is that there's somebody on a YouTube channel, a couple guys that I love to watch, that are talking how great this $90 headlamp is. There's nobody talking about that $10 headlamp.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and I looked at, you know, all the different factors. Does it lock? Does it have a red beam? Does it, you know, what is the lux, which is the amount of light that hits a certain spot? I bought a lux meter to look at the lux, you know, at 10 feet away, what's, you know, how powerful is that light? And so, and in my analysis, the performance and value just wasn't there with a headlamp that's $90. Now, the Black Diamond headlamp, which was, I think, in the $30 or $40, incredible headlamp, loved it. Not necessarily would I use it, But I really like that headlamp. It's a brand name, but it has a lot of capabilities that I liked with it. And so I agree, there is a little bit of, you know, where we as hunters get raked over the coals sometimes if we're not careful.
Yeah. Man, I have two headlamps. One is an Energizer brand, right? I don't know why I bought it. It was sitting there with the battery pack all combined into one. And so I was like, hey, dude, I'm just going to buy this just in case. And I keep it in my truck all the time. And then I have a Black Diamond as well. I think I paid $75 for that one. It's crazy good, right? But it runs out of batteries faster because I think it just takes more power to what I'm using it for, like walking, like out of the, you know, out west, you know, when I'm traversing, you know, steep inclines or declines, I want as much light as possible so I can see my footings. And meanwhile, the Energizer one, I mean, I feel like it lasts forever, probably because I'm using it less and it's not as powerful, but, just kind of goes to show you that could I get away with that Energizer brand? Yes, I could definitely. And exactly what you said, I went out looking for headlamps and I was like, man, that looks a lot like that Energizer brand. And it's probably another brand using the exact same thing. They're licensing the name and it's built in the same factory in China somewhere. And it's the exact same product. So I don't know. I get a kick out of that stuff.
Maybe it's not a secret, but it's a dirty little secret, especially with some product categories. And you know, the headlamps I was looking at, you know, a lot of them were at like 1,000 lumens or 1,100 lumens. I think that Black Diamond was, I'm looking at it now, it was 400 lumens. And, you know, and none of them were really bad. But again, it just goes back to what you as a hunter, how you want to spend your hard-earned dollar.
So. Right, right. And so far, do you feel that price does reflect quality then?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on the product category. I mean, it really does. I think like my next focus is, and this video isn't out, but because I'm working on it now, are bino harnesses, Dan. I mean, holy smokes. There's like it's the gold rush. There's so many different versions of bino harnesses and they're all priced. They're all kind of expensive, but they're all, you know, some have some variability in that. Mm-hmm. And I've pulled in some cheaper ones because I really want to understand where is the value and performance intersect with bino harnesses. I mean, I've had one for a number of years that is fine. It's okay. But now I'm going to look at the new one from First Light. It just launched yesterday. I'm going to look at the one from Sitka. That they, the primary one that they have, the one from, Marsupial Gear, yep. I think is the name of the company. And the First Light one is FHF Gear, just to be clear. They bought that company years ago. So, you know, and then I'm going to look at Badlands and then a couple other ones. Mm-hmm. And again, I just want to understand what is the noise factor? Can I fit all my wind checker and rangefinder and all that stuff? And then when I go to use it, is it going to work for me in a stalking situation or not? Or is it going to make a bunch of noise? And so, you know, I want to sort of look at it from a whole bunch of parameters, but, you know, cost is one of them. And some of them are really pricey, including that FHF Gear one.
Yeah.
But again, I guess, I think, you bought an e-bike and you've talked about that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are e-bikes out there that are 750 watt, you know, whatever, for $1,000, and then you can go way high in that category with Baku or with Quiet Cat, or you know, with some of those brands. There's, you know, some other big brands, and you can spend a lot of money on an e-bike, but yep. But I don't know where, how, like what makes it, you know, a Quiet Cat different than a Rattan e-bike that's $1,000 or a Baku. You know, that's also pretty expensive.
Yeah.
So I think it just depends on the category, honestly.
Yeah. And I'll be completely honest with you, man. I was not going to be able to afford that that e-bike if I had to pay full retail value for it. I mean, I straight up new guy that worked there. I got an employee discount that's 50% off. And so instead of paying, I think it was like $6,500 for it, I paid $3,500 for it. And and so that's a gigantic discount, you know, for me that on a product that I otherwise wouldn't have bought. Now, is it awesome? Yes, it's awesome. No, like walking 6 miles and riding a bike 6 miles in like 1/8 of the time, you know, like up and down. And like when I was in South Dakota this year, man, it's just such a huge deal. I mean, I got back, I didn't see any mule deer, but I still got back there. Right. And yeah. So it was interesting. Now there is this conversation that every time I talk about this topic, people say, you know, Eddie Bauer, these people may be against hunting, or, you know, Columbia, these guys may be against hunting. I think, one of the bigger retailers, REI, or I'm trying to think if it was REI or Backcountry. I can't, it was a brand like that basically came out and was against hunting. Right. And so now you have these brands that might be not necessarily for hunting, yet as a hunter, you're giving your dollars to them, right? For nothing but added value, you know, nothing but a cheaper product, right? That may, it may perform well, but your dollars going to a company that doesn't support. Now, we know that First Light is a hunting brand, right? They support hunters. Sitka, they support hunters. Both of those companies donate to conservation. Both of those companies, you know, are a talk the talk and walk the walk type of company when it comes to giving back to the natural resource that we all take away from every single year in many aspects. And so when it comes to making a decision based off that alone, what are your thoughts?
It's a really good question, Dan, because, you know, I hear you. Like, I think Jetboil, the company that makes Jetboil, isn't for hunting. But, you know, like MSR is a competing brand that I think is okay with hunting or whatever. Mm-hmm. So, and I have a Jetboil, so I'm, you know, I'm a communist.
But, you asshole. You asshole.
Yeah, I'm an asshole. So, you know, here's what I would say is, you know, if you bought the Eddie Bauer jacket and you save $300 or a couple hundred bucks or whatever, put that money towards, you know, Sportsman's Alliance or HAL, you know, one of those organizations that are fighting for hunter rights in our states where we're getting attacked. So, you know, Sportsman's Alliance is out of Ohio. I'm a member of that group. And, you know, and I would encourage folks to just, if you feel bad about making that purchase from Eddie Bauer, you know, give some money to Sportsman's Alliance or HAL. HAL, I think, is out west. And because we are under attack constantly. Mm-hmm. And I think, yes, you know, First Light and Sitka and Kuyu, they support, you know, they put money back into conservation and those sorts of things. And, you know, part of the Pittman-Robinson Act is, you know, our hunting gear is taxed and that money goes into conservation sort of indirectly when we make those purchases. But I think that's how I would handle it, because at the end of the day, Dan, I mean, I have limited resources for my job and my income, and as do you. And I just have to make the best purchase decision that fits my needs and my family. I mean, if somebody is really outspoken, like, you know, then I guess, you know, I probably would try to go a different direction. Like, if they were really outspoken against hunting and really created issues for us, then I would definitely avoid them. But like when it comes to some of the brands, I don't know if they've communicated a stance. So for me, I think I'm okay with that, but maybe maybe I'm a jerk. So,
well, at the same time, man, like at the end of the day, money is the ultimate factor, right? I mean, some people don't have X number of dollars to go buy the pop. How would I say this? People don't have the money to buy the Sitka or the First Lights of the world, but they do have the money to buy a product that does roughly equal, right? I know some conditions, wet conditions or the actual makeup of the material and things has a play in how things function in the wild. But you know, the Eddie Bowers of the world, you know, it's cheaper, does the same thing. Like how do you say that? Like, I don't even know how to say it other than, hey man, it's cheaper but does the same thing, so just buy it.
it goes back to, I have to buy a new vehicle and sometime this year, and it's like, you know, do I buy American made or do I buy something, you know, exactly, that's not American made? And it's a tough decision because you have to look at, like, well, what's the durability, what's the, you know, how long is this going to create a lot of problems if I buy this particular brand? And do I want to, again, go back into that tribalism thing where I need to be part of the Ford tribe or the Chevy tribe or whatever? So, you know, I think, you know, again, it just goes back to that product category. If you know, Dan, I have a friend up in Alaska, and there's a chance that I may go hunt Alaska in a couple years. And if that's the case, then maybe, you know, I might take a more critical look at some of my rain gear or the gear where I'm going to, my synthetic, you know, my sleeping bag. I might want something that's synthetic, and I might want something that where I know it's been tested in those environments, and I will be willing to spend more. But if I'm just going to be going, you know, walking 100 yards into the woods to hunt, you know, some farm, or if I'm hunting, you know, run and gun here in Kentucky, or even in, you know, the mountains of Montana, I feel like I can, you know, be okay with something that's not built for the most extreme weather and situation.
Right.
So I think everybody has to sort of make those decisions based on their personal situation. But it's a tough question because, again, we want to support hunters. We want to support hunting brands, people that build into us. I mean, they create incredible hunting content, which I consume.
Yep.
So, you know, there's sort of a give and take there. But sometimes it does seem like the prices are a little out of whack.
Yeah.
And so we have to vote with our dollar to say, hey, that's not an appropriate price.
Right.
And that's the only way we can do it.
So, and this is what boggles my mind on some of these direct-to-consumer companies, okay? Is First Light still 100% direct-to-consumer that you know of, or are they in stores now?
You know, they switched to that, I think, a couple years ago, to direct-to-consumer. And So I think they are, Kuyu is obviously sort of the original DTC. And then, but I think Sitka is in Cabela's and Bass Pro Shops still.
Okay, yeah, I know Sitka isn't. But so this is what blows my mind about brands like Kuyu and First Light, right? And then you compare them to, let's just say, a company like Sitka, which is not direct to consumer. They sell in retails, right? And the whole thing is, the whole motivation of direct to consumer is to, you know, like, hey, there's no middleman, right? We're selling our product directly to you. And therefore the attractiveness is our margins don't have to be, you know, our final product doesn't have to be as expensive on a consumer level because we're not having to resell it again to make our profit. Right. So, but what I've started to find, and this is especially in the hunting space, that's not the case. Right. Their product, like Kuyu's product and First Light's product, I would say are at the same price point as those two companies are direct to consumer as a Sitka lineup. And you can say this about any category in any brand. Trail cameras are another one, right? Where the price for a direct to consumer is like the benefit, there's like a risk versus reward. The risk is if I buy direct to consumer, something doesn't fit, I have to send it back. Now, if I go to a store, I can try it on right then and there, and I don't have to do any of that extra stuff. I just can buy it because I know it fits. And so But now the price point's the exact same. So the attractiveness of something being direct to consumer just isn't there anymore.
I would agree. I think this podcast is going to make sure that I never get sponsored by any big clothing brand.
Whatever.
And that's okay. Yeah. I'm okay with that. That's why I'm doing this for fun. Not to create another job for myself, but I had an experience with First Light. I ordered a vest from them a couple years ago, and I was like, hey, this is too big. I need to size down. And they were like, okay, well, here's the address. And I'm like, well, is there a shipping label? And they're like, no. And I'm like, well, wait a minute. You don't have a store for me to try it on. You can't just give me a shipping label. So it was an additional $12 to send back. And that really, you know, that was irritating. Now, I'll be honest with you, I still buy some of their gear. I have a bunch of their merino stuff and other items. I don't have anything against them personally, but I do agree that the DTC model, while it's like, hey, we're cutting out the middleman so we can give you a better deal, it doesn't necessarily translate into a better deal for you and I. It seems like it's especially when you see, like, if we were to do optics, like, I know Maven Optics is a DTC optics, whereas, you have Vortex and you have Leupold. It would be interesting to sort of see them side by side. And that's probably not something I'll be doing. But but looking at, you know, the clarity of something from Leupold and Vortex and then Maven, and also sort of the price points to see if, like, oh, wow, the Maven is, because it's just DTC, it's significantly better. It's in another tier, or is it just as good as some of the other ones? So
yeah, like if you were to compare it to Swarovski's instead of...
Yes.
Yeah, right. And that's what I heard about Maven, was they're like the direct-to-consumer version of Swarovski's. And so I probably said that name wrong. But anyway, I'm interested here... to finish out this podcast here, I'm interested to know how you went about comparing the hunting apps to each other and came up with the end result there, because there is a lot of really cool things that I know things like Hunt Stand are doing. And what's the other one? I should know this. I just talked with the guy the other day. Spartan Forge.
Yeah.
What they're doing as well. I mean, they're doing some really cool things. What apps did you compare to each other? How did you compare them to each other? And then what was the end result?
So I looked at Basemap, Go Hunt, and Basemap's been around for a little bit. Go Hunt is that Western. They're out of Las Vegas, and they have an insider thing platform for people. And so they went into mapping.
Yep.
Hunt Stand, Hunt Wise, which are both a little confusing, Onyx and Spartan Forge. And then I'm going to be rolling out a video that looks at Gaia GPS.
Okay.
Now, Gaia isn't a hunting platform per se, but I wanted to see how it compared to see if I could use it as a hunting platform. And so I looked at, the free trials, the annual price for 50 states, can you download the maps, and how much can you download? The download style, is it dynamic or is it static? The tracking feature, the waypoints, do they have a 3D desktop? I looked at all the layers, and on my Instagram profile, Dan, I have cheat sheets for pretty much every analysis that I've done, so that you can print it off and see everything that I've shared and studied. So because this, the mapping thing, there's so many layers with some of these platforms, like it's extensive. And so I looked at, and I gave each layer a rating. I gave I looked at the waypoints and gave that a rating. And I looked at the type of topo mapping or topographic mapping. And I looked at the tools and gave that a rating as well. And so, what was interesting is that, some of them had, and again, I guess I should state this. I was looking at it from the standpoint of someone like myself that hunts many states locally, mm-hmm. in the Midwest or South. and then somebody that goes west.
Right.
You know, can I use it for both? And so, you know, the final scores, and I'll just share them right now. I mean, I'll start from worst to first. Let's see, coming in last, and this was, you know, I'm not trying to disparage this company, but Spartan Forge came in dead last. They scored a 32 out of a possible 80. Now, I know they've made some updates. They've added 3D desktop. They've added a shading tool. They've have 3D now on their handheld. But at the time, they didn't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And they did. They don't have hunt units out west. I think they're starting to add that. They didn't have a lot of things that the other platforms had, and so they finished last.
Out of curiosity, did you compare the forecasting? Because I think, I think the main feature that, or what they advertise on Spartan Forge is the deer movement forecasting, kind of like DeerCast, and I think Hunt Stand has some stuff like that as well.
Yeah. So, I included those features as an additional benefit.
Okay.
But if you're in the mapping game and you're doing waypoints and you're doing public land and private land and topographic layers, and if you're in the hunting game, then I included you in the evaluation.
Gotcha.
And so the gentleman that the founder, he reached out to me, and we sort of exchanged notes. And again, I know that they're going to evolve into something different, but that at the time they're $39.99 and I understand they have the deer prediction model,
mm-hmm.
you know, and I get that, but so do other platforms. And I understand there's probably differences there, but if you're going to be selling the mapping feature, you know, and in my analysis, I included you. So, but they do have some tools that I really do like, and I do note that in the videos and in the spreadsheet. The Go Hunt platform came in fifth and scored a 53. It's geared really for that Western hunter. It's not designed for me to use in the East and in the West per se. It had some holes in its game. Base map scored a 55. It came in fourth. And then Hunt Stand and OnX both sort of tied for second. I was blown away, like, by Hunt Stand. For $30, you get an incredible amount of value. I mean, they have daily satellite images, or not daily, monthly satellite images, yeah, in Hunt Stand, which is I thought was fantastic. But HuntWise won the competition. It scored 69, and it just was so robust in terms of layers, tools, features, and waypoints for someone that hunts in the East and the West. Right. It was very versatile as a platform. So, I'm again, Gaia, I've been looking at it, and it performed pretty well, but it still it was sort of at the back of the pack. So,
right.
But it was a lot of fun to really break that down, because sometimes you feel like a hunting map app is a hunting map app, but if you want to use it in the way that you hunt, there are a lot of differences.
Yeah. Did you happen to break it down by ease of use? And what I mean by that is, from the time it takes to open the app to the time it takes to start using it, how many touches or clicks or swipes, what was the most, had the best ease of use?
You know, I didn't really include that, because I know I'm very biased, because I have used OnX for so long.
Yeah.
And I tried to I consumed every sort of YouTube video that each of these platforms put out there, so that I understood how Hunt Stand worked, or how HuntWise or Spartan Forge even.
Yeah.
And because I did want to give each of them a fair shake. I think if you and I played around with them enough, Dan, we'd probably be pretty fluent with any of them. Yeah. I'm sure there's some, I mean, there were some things with Hunt Stand that I didn't love from an interface standpoint, but all told, you know, I think if you play around with them enough, you sort of, it's like speaking a new language sort of thing. Yeah. Like, you know, so they all did, you know, they were all pretty user friendly in that capacity.
Gotcha. Cool. Any interesting finds in that study that you're like, holy cow, this is cool.
With the mapping?
Yeah, the mapping apps.
Well, you know, some of them have a full tilt 3D, and some of them only do a 30-degree tilt when you're doing 3D. And I thought that was kind of interesting. You know, the base map doesn't allow you, and this is going to hurt you, Dan, but base map doesn't have 3D on an Android devices, only on Apple devices.
Sons of bitches.
I know.
All right, whatever.
They don't even have BaseNet doesn't even have 3D on the desktop. They just have it on your Apple phone, which I thought was sort of backwards.
Huh.
But I think there's I'm trying to look through some of my notes right now because it's been a while since I did this one. But the base map didn't do really well, but they did have this feature where it's sort of like a rangefinder. Like let's say you're out west and you see a shed across a canyon. Or maybe you shot, you know, a bear or a something across the canyon with your rifle. You can use the rangefinder tool on the app, lock it in, and then it'll create sort of a trail up to it on your app.
Oh, so cool.
That you're like, now it might not be the best route, but it gives you like, okay, now as I hike down the canyon and back up, I can look and see, oh, I'm 100 yards away from that shed antler or my buck or whatever. Yeah. And I thought that was a really neat tool. And I think we're going to see more and more of those things integrated with all the platforms. It's like a lot of things, what once was really new and innovative, eventually all of them will have and adopt, and then the baseline sort of goes up. But I thought that was a neat feature.
Yeah. Let's see here. One of the last questions I have for you is, after doing all these reviews, have you learned anything about maybe yourself and how you make purchasing decisions on your hunting gear and equipment, and how that could translate into things that others should keep an eye out when making hunting gear purchases?
I was so hell-bent on buying a new bow this year, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
I have a Hoyt Vector. It's 10 years old. And I was hell bent on buying a new bow. And I just was like, I'm going to get one. I got to get one. I have to get one. It's the technology is so different. And yet I shot incredible with that bow last year. And I decided, I talked myself off the ledge and bought a new sight pin that has third axis adjustment. And then I bought new cables and strings, and it shoots lights out. A few years ago, I bought a bow press. And so what I would just encourage everybody to do is just step back and think about, like, instead of buying a new bow, maybe buy a bow press and become your own bow shop. And then you can have a bow for, you know, a decade that shoots lights out, and you don't have to sort of quote unquote upgrade because, you know, there's a new Matthews or a new Hoyt or whatever. It's if you shoot well with it, and if you try to get yourself out to longer distances, you'll figure out what you're doing wrong with your form or what you need to tune. Then, you know, you can save yourself some coin. And again, like we opened up this interview, spend money on tags and going out west,
right,
and experiences, and not $2,000 on a new bow setup. So yeah. So I would just, that's sort of what I've learned about myself in terms of it. You know, I talked myself into it unknowingly and then had to talk myself out.
Yeah. Gotcha. All right. Cool, man. Well, we're going to close her down here. Any other cool bits of information you'd like to share with the listeners of this podcast today about the stuff that you've been doing?
I mean, I'm on Instagram. It's J_Coons_Hunts. That's the same tagline for YouTube, J_Coons_Hunts. If you go to my Instagram page, there's a link in my profile, and you can find all of the research sheets there for free. You can find links to the YouTube channel. But again, I'm not doing this to be mean or disparaging to you know, the Sick Gizzard First Lights of the world. I'm just trying to find value in performance
right.
for myself. And I just like to share it because, like I said, it's a creative outlet. But yeah, you know, I appreciate the opportunity to talk about this stuff, Dan, and hope to have, you know, continue to pump out more stuff as I find things that are interesting to me. So.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I tell you what, Jacob, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me for a little bit. Thanks for your time and good luck this upcoming season.
You as well. Thank you, Dan.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
Tired of juggling sales tools or spending hours on prospecting just to book a few meetings? Meet Apollo, the go-to-market platform for finding leads, connecting with buyers, and closing deals all in one place. Apollo gives you access to over 210 million contacts and AI that handles all your busy work, finding leads, drafting emails, and even prioritizing your day. So stop paying for five different sales tools when one does it all. Visit apollo.io and sign up free today.
Hey, it's Cole Swindell. After I give everything I've got to land a perfect vocal, I usually take five before jumping into the next track. And I've learned exactly how to recharge in that time. Some folks grab coffee. I hit a quick good luck spin. Next thing you know, the break is just as fun as laying down the track. A better break makes for a better take. Need a break? Let's chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus TNC supply. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.